This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasothi. It's our Doctor in the House series. We've had a no guest policy, and so our Doctor in the House has not been able to come in. However, we have him on Zoom today, this evening, on 2 days before Hari Raya. And Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, how are you today?
62 days later, I'm missing you. I'm counting.
I can see George and our guest, our special guest for Hari Raya, the Hari Raya show today, because we're on Zoom and our videos are on, as in we can see, our cameras are on. However, unfortunately, you are unable to see us, but you can hear both of them loud and clearly. So joining us also today for our Hari Raya show is Dr. Helmi Hajamaidin, consultant respiratory physician. How are you, Dr. Helmi?
Hi, good afternoon, Mira. I'm fine. I can't believe, I think George was saying it's 62 days. I honestly don't know if it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday or Sunday.
You know, I have a question for you. Why are you still at work?
Because people still do fall ill. So I guess I have to see that. But also the other thing is, you know, there's no Balik Kampung this year, right? So there's no real reason to take too much time off.
Yep.
So I might as well be at work and do, you know, various bits and pieces, bits and bobs and pieces. See, I can't even talk. No coffee. Bossa is doing this, doing me in.
I apologize. You just got one more day, Dr. Helmi, and you're done with Ramadan. George, how have you been?
I've been good. I obviously learned how to Zoom, right? 2 days ago, none of us had heard of Zoom. All right. Okay. And yeah, it's been obviously just like Dr. Helmi, we've been also working, even though the working hours and also the working etiquette has changed. But it's been a little bit of eye-opening 62 days for me. Both in a private life and also in career. So I must say it's been, I don't think we're probably going to ever have a 62 days like this again in our lives. So I treasure it a lot and I learn a lot about myself and also about the my work and my patients.
Yeah, just coming back to your work, George, what has been, what have been some of the toughest aspects for you to get used to in the last 62 days?
Right. I guess initially, in the height of the fear and, you know, the shutdown, and I think the most scary part probably was this. I deal with many patients who perhaps have other conditions that has got temperature, for example, urinary tract infections. And then when they turn up to clinic, and then it's not always that fear that whether, you know, you check their COVID status, they're going to turn up positive or not, and you're going to end up being quarantined for 14 days or not. And that hasn't happened. And obviously, thank goodness. But how we practice and how we, the etiquette of cleanliness and that sort of thing, we take that very seriously now. So I'm sure Dr. Christopher Lee will be very happy to hear that, because he's been going on and on about this for since SARS. And also the other thing which is very important now is that a lot of my patients know that I give up my private number for them. And then so that builds up an infrastructure for them to get in touch with me. So I have some patients who have got cancer, who need to renew their medications, and I've got questions. And I'm really glad that that really generated an infrastructure for them so that they can get in touch with me. And that changed the way I practice, and then changed the way I look at, you know, how we deliver the care to patients.
Okay. What about you, Helmi? I mean, you are a chest physician, and this virus attacks the lungs in a very aggressive way. I mean, how have you been keeping yourself protected if patients happen to come in and are positive?
I think it's very much similar to what George was saying, in that we kind of approach things very differently now. And on my side, you know, when it comes to respiratory symptoms, it's very difficult to differentiate COVID positive patients from non-COVID cases, because the symptoms are basically very similar to most chest infections. So in a sense, most of us here, we've established a rule where if you have respiratory symptoms, it's COVID until proven otherwise. One may argue that that's a little bit over the top, because thankfully we still have a relatively low prevalence of the disease in the country. But because these things are very difficult to predict, it would make more sense to err on the side of caution. So we have lots of policies, SOPs in place whereby we protect ourselves. So we need to ensure that all the frontliners, so it's not just myself, but more importantly, my nursing colleagues, even the security guards, anyone who is involved in cleaning, they all wear and have adequate PPE. So whether it's talking about masks or gowns, all those things are very important. And at the, I suppose, at the slightest hint of that being the disease, then we get the patients tested early on, because that provides both either early intervention or it allows us to be a lot more reassured and then focus on the next thing. And the other thing that's really affected, not quite me, but a lot of my patients, is just that fear and anxiety. Because once again, when you have a respiratory patient, you have symptoms that are very similar to what you may find in COVID. And when you Google things up, it's very easy to take that simple cough that you have, or that fever, or that bit of breathlessness that you have as something that's representative of the pandemic, where else it could easily be someone's asthma, for example. So in that sense, a lot of my patients see me or communicate with me, not necessarily because of a deterioration in their physical state, but sometimes in their psychological state.
You know, the whole idea of wearing a PPE, what's that been like for you, George? Have you done surgery since over the last 62 days?
Well, actually, we do wear PPE and under two circumstances. Under one circumstance is we have a patient under investigation, PUI, and then the patient will be segregated and then all the doctors have to put that on. And obviously the first time it's Instagram worthy, and then also it's a lot of fun. And subsequent times is
only
actually...
Only you, La George, only you.
Well, you know, you get to get
Instagram
some...
Instagram worthy.
Worthy, right?
Wearing a PPE. I mean, come on.
And then afterwards, I realized that how cumbersome it can be when you do precision operations. Now, if you truly have to operate on a patient who under emergency... with PUI, and then all the staff have to wear it, and I've got failing eyesight due to age, and then now trying to do precision operations with that, and on top of that, the PPE steamer is not an easy thing. So
So I've been told that your glasses fog up when you wear the PPE, and right. How have you overcome that? Or have you gone like a macho without your glasses and hoping for the best?
Well, patient, snip, snip, and the wrong thing comes off. Yes.
You're not supposed to share this information.
George.
Now. You just turn off the lights a little bit more so that you can see a little bit brighter, but everything fogs up quite dramatically. So therefore, preferably, you don't want to, you want to make sure that patient status is established first and then not have to go through that for both patients and for yourself. Because it's not just a surgeon, it's the staff, it's also the patient themselves have to undergo specific maneuvers.
You know, Helmi, a lot of people have delayed coming to the hospital to get treatment. Some actually need treatment, but they've not been coming because they're afraid that they will, you know, get infected by the virus. Now, our health director general has made it clear that most healthcare workers who have contracted the virus got it from the community and not from the hospital. Many doctors have come forward to say that the hospital is probably the safest place to be in at the moment. What are your thoughts on that, Helmi?
I think there has to be some degree of pragmatism when it comes to having symptoms. And despite there being all the headlines about COVID-19, things like TB, lung cancer, none of those have disappeared. And any prolonged symptom, I think, needs to be addressed early on, whether by a primary care doctor or someone in the hospital. And you're right, because in a sense, the level of alertness is so high that most hospitals have very strict protocols about who is allowed in, who is segregated into a totally different investigative pathway. So I, for example, I'm relatively confident when I'm in my hospital, when I'm working, but when I go to, say, a really busy grocery store, then I get a little bit kind of anxious myself, because I don't really know to what degree the SOPs are being adhered to. And, you know, you're talking about people that you don't necessarily screen properly. Like recently I was at a restaurant and the entire page of the recorded temperatures were illogical. We had people walking in with temperatures supposedly of 29 degrees Celsius, which is, you know, zombie levels. And, you know, and I was just thinking to myself, if that's the case, then you don't really know what's going on. And, you know, you're putting yourself at a much higher risk. So I think, yeah, you have to be practical. And I think if you do have any symptoms that's not quite going away, first of all, do see a doctor. And secondly, some people, they are afraid that they'll be diagnosed with COVID. And as a result, they'll be hauled off to God knows where, and they'll disappear off the face of the earth. But that's not quite the case. You know, it's really all about catching things early so that not only the individual, but their loved ones are not affected as well. And last I checked, you know, hotels aren't too bad.
The hotels aren't so bad. I mean, you know, the thought of an ambulance pulling up and then people jumping out in PPEs and coming to get you, that's a scary scenario, Dr. Helmy. Come on. How would you help us sort of not be afraid of something like that?
I was going to say watch less Netflix, because I'm just, what you just mentioned made me think of Money Heist. So there's people coming in, you know, this whole team coming in and dragging people away. But no, I think, okay, in real life, you're probably not that aggressive when it comes to dragging people away. Arguably, we are too nice, because, you know, if you look at how our director general, how some of our ministers talk, it's always about saya minta tolong, saya, you know, I encourage people and all that, as opposed to, hey, do this. If not, you're going to be hauled to jail, which to me, I'm a little bit more aggressive, I think. I would say, you know, we should be a little bit more strict when it comes to people who don't follow the rules. But if you do have a positive case, then it is really as you would approach any patient with a positive disease. So you would explain to the patient what's going on. The fact that most of us, I'm talking about more than 80%, we have mild symptoms or no symptoms. And as a result, it's all about monitoring so that if things were to deteriorate, then you'll be in a place where things can be introduced early on so that you don't fall into the category of those who need ICU level care or need a ventilator, or if in the worst case scenario, people who pass on. So thankfully, the ministry has done a great job in the sense that if you look at the numbers, whilst the numbers of positive cases seem to be kind of fluctuating at the moment, the numbers of patients who are in ICU, the ones who are passing on, have been kept to a really low level.
Okay. When we come back, I want to find out about George. I mean, I just realized that I have two of you doctors who are Tatler boys, appear on the Tatler all the time. I mean, why do I see your faces in the Tatler all the time? Helmy, George, how are you taking not being able to go out, George? I mean, you're a socialite. You've been confined for 62 days either at home or in the hospital, George. We'll come back and find out how George is managing his mental health up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. It's our Doctor in the House series. It's a Friday. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, on Zoom with me. Joining us also, Dr. Helmy Hajimaidin, consultant respiratory physician. We're just having a conversation. We just don't have a real topic today. I just want to catch up and find out how the both of you have been doing over the last 62 days. I mean, it's Hari Raya around the corner. George, before I go to Helmy and, you know, Hari Raya and how he's managing, you know, his home life and, you know, his personal life, how have you been managing, George? Your Instagram posts have...
You sound like a Tatler interviewer now.
It is not, but your Instagram posts have dropped. The number have dropped tremendously, George. You're slacking.
Yeah. Oh, spray things out of this, you know, keep having the hospital's Instagrams. I think when things is being put in perspective, and early on, Helmy highlighted that, you know, sometimes going outside and then you worry about contracting the disease from the busy non-compliant supermarket or something like that. I think there's something that is within my control is to keep myself fit and healthy. So during these 60-odd days, I am doing as much as I can. I'm actually as fit as I can be. I know that last when you saw me, I'm doing a lot of cycling now. I'm swimming. I'm actually, exercise at home. I think that itself keeps me healthy. And I think that is obviously going to keep the disease at bay. And I think that's the first important thing, keep me sane. The second thing which I wanted to do, you know, we all have in trays, and my in trays are like stackings up, and then things like old photo albums, stamp collection, first day cover, coin collection, they're all in storage, right? And I spent the last 2 months digging all of them out and sorting my life baggages out. And that was one of the most amazing things I've ever done, because without these 2 months, I would never have done that. And I really think these two things really kept me mentally sane during this time. And
but then what about the social interaction, George?
I talk to myself.
Yeah, I'm referring you to somebody now.
I was going to say, but it's okay to talk to yourself, but are you hearing voices talking back?
Ah.
I have wonderful neighbors, even though, you know, she cooks for me amazingly, and she still keeps social distancing. She just passed the food from the balcony to my balcony from time to time. In fact, it's almost on a daily basis. And then, and also thank you, Michelle. And then I get to interact with her with social distancing. And also at work, we do interact with the staff. So I think I'm very lucky that I can maintain that social interaction with people, because I was still partly working, even though it's only a few hours.
And Helmi, I mean, you've got two children and very young children. You come to work, you go home. How have you been managing that?
To be honest with you, I don't think there's been much change, in the sense that work is work. I'm still doing that. So in a sense, the MCO hasn't affected me as much. Perhaps as George mentioned, social life has dropped down significantly and you're a little bit more hesitant to meet people. But I think that's where technology comes into play as well, because then you end up using all the tools that are at your disposal. So that's been quite useful. And I've been keeping contact with people in that way. But the other thing that's been highlighted, I think, over the past few weeks is the issues that are being faced by a lot of people in society when it comes to how we've been locked down. So there's the healthcare aspect, but there's a lot of economic aspect as well. And a lot of us, I think we have probably come across efforts to help people who have been affected by this. So there are people who are not being paid at the moment, people who don't have enough food on the table. And one of the things that some of us have been doing is we're trying to get together various teams on the ground to help out those people. And that, I think, also helps put things into perspective, because I'm fortunate enough to have a job. I'm fortunate enough to go and earn a living. But there are a lot of people out there who have not been able to have the same opportunity and are affected very differently. And I think where we can, that's where getting people together to help out, I think, is very useful. And that's one of the things that me and a lot of my other friends have been getting ourselves involved in as well.
Okay. So sort of giving back wherever you can.
Exactly.
Okay. And we're talking about the new normal. What's the new normal? What do you think is the new normal going to be like, George? And do you think Malaysians will be able to sustain this new normal?
Well, first of all, in healthcare, I really think that we cannot be complacent. And so the new normal has to be what is supposed to be normal, which is cleanliness, hand washing. And then I wash my hands so much that I always need to carry a hand cream as well, because the skins are all cracking, right? So I obviously, you know, hand hygiene is number one. And also I think that new normal is supposed to be the normal in the first place. The other new normal, I really thought, you know, all these socializing and that sort of things, and, you know, you actually enjoy yourself equally much at home. And I found my new normal at home, so which I can survive. I think what I miss the most, I miss my mom. And she doesn't want to see me. She said, look, don't bring this business home, right? Okay. And then she's in Kotabaru. So my new normal is I talk to her on FaceTime, and, you know, I love to go and see her. I even contemplating generating some sort of letter for myself so that I can drive back to Kotabaru for Raya.
Don't hope, George. Don't hope.
I get arrested for that.
But my especially when you declare it to the whole country, yes.
Exactly.
The new normal is stay away from me, and then we'll talk on the phone. So I don't know how long that's going to last, because I really miss my Kotabaru boy, you know. So you can take the Kelantanese out of Kelantan, but you really, he will miss Kelantan a lot.
I'm sure. Oh, George, your mother must, she doesn't want to see you anyway, so don't worry.
I know.
I wonder
she
why.
She has an excuse.
don't come back ever.
What about you, Helmi? What do you think the new normal is going to be like for you?
I think socializing, yeah, because yesterday, actually, I was getting one of my little girls to salam an elderly and more elder person that she came across. And then I kind of had this debate in my mind, you know, you teach your kids to salam your elders and to be respectful, but actually these days, do you actually tell them to salam or not? Do you tell them to just kind of stay away and, you know, don't actually have any physical contact? And I still find myself offering my hand whenever I meet people. And that's an instinctive thing that over time probably needs to be brought down. So I think the way we socialize, whether it's in terms of physical contact, in terms of hanging out, meeting, that's going to be very, very different. It's not going to change anytime soon. And I'm slightly pessimistic in the sense that, you know, I don't think this is going to be the last pandemic in our lifetimes. As soon as we get over this, you know, in 10, 15, 20 years, given the way we have, given what we've seen with SARS, MERS-CoV, and now with COVID-19, it's bound to happen again. Only thing is, hopefully, there's enough of an impact from this particular pandemic so that the next time it comes around, we'll be a heck of a lot more prepared.
Yeah. Do you think Malaysia has done well in terms of managing the spread of the virus?
I think we have.
And Singapore?
So yeah, I think Malaysia has done well. I think we have been very good in terms of identifying the hotspots, the red zones. The DG has been very clear in his messaging and very regular in his updates. So I think those have led to a lot of reassurance on the ground. If anything can be done better, I think we probably need to do more testing. But of course, that's a very difficult thing to implement straight away, given the restrictions we have when it comes to lab availability and expertise. But that's one thing that I would hope to see improve over the next few weeks.
But Singapore has one of the highest testing rate in the world, I think.
They do, and they have focused very much on a particular sector where there's a lot of foreign workers in one particular area. And I think in terms of Malaysia, of course, we are facing a much bigger geographical spread. And a similar focus on positive red zones, I think, would be in keeping with what's best in terms of the next plan of action. So if we were to find, say, positive cases in a particular cluster, then we can probably target that area at a much higher rate versus screening across the board, because that would be quite difficult at this stage.
George, how long are you spending in clinic every day?
I used to spend, like, you know, 7 o'clock, get into a clinic and get home probably by 6 o'clock. Now I spend the morning exercising and then get to work by 8:30, 9 o'clock. So I really, and you know, I love myself a lot more that way. And then I carry on working.
Really? I always knew that.
Yes.
Nothing to do with the MCO.
I wake up nice and early to exercise and, you know, it feels good.
I was talking also about you loving yourself.
Oh, gosh. You can never have enough of loving oneself, right? You can always love yourself more.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Unless you're Trump. Yes.
Ooh.
Ooh. And then
it's okay. 2 minutes left. Can't do much more damage.
I finish by 2 o'clock. I'm doing a lot of university work through Zoom. And then so I'm really enjoying that. So I'm kind of balancing out both academic and also clinical responsibilities.
Okay. And okay. But at some point, George, you will need the money. What are you going to do? It's income for you as well, isn't it? I'm sure income has dropped tremendously, even for you.
Well, it has. It has. Well, I worked out something out of my boredom. I worked out something called day trading. Ooh. Because what I've worked out is that I'm listening to all these gems from BFM telling about market going up, coming down. Never understood a single word you guys said. But now,
thanks, George. Thanks very much.
And a bit more.
Okay. All right. So you've been day trading.
That's right. Okay. So far, I've been lucky with the gloves company. So I think that's a problem. Right?
Okay. What? Helmi?
Oh, sorry. What?
No. I'm sure your income has been affected as well.
Oh yeah, yeah. It has been, and I think the way I suppose it's one of those things, right? These things come in cycles, so I'm fairly optimistic that at some point things will go back to normal once we have a little bit more understanding of what's going on, once we have a vaccine. So in that sense, yes, it's not too good at the moment, but as with the economy in general, I would expect things to get better in the future.
Okay. Helmi, it's Hari Raya on Sunday. How do you think it's going to be different?
People are going to be perhaps a little bit more nervous. I think there'll be, and I hope actually, that there'll be a lot less socializing, and people, even though there is that rule of 20, they don't go to 20 different houses with 20 different people because that's kind of making it pointless. And of course, there are still thousands of people trying to cross state borders. Thankfully, George is not one of them.
Yep.
And I would hope that that is something that we keep to the bare minimum, because otherwise we'll see another spike in the number of cases.
Do you think, have you heard from family members and friends about how they're going to be celebrating Raya differently?
Similarly, so I've got people who are just really, really, I think, distraught at the inability to visit their loved ones. So just as George is unable to see mom in Kelantan, he's one of many people who are going through the same things. And it's tradition, right, to go and, you know, visit your loved ones, to go to graves, to have prayers. So taking away that in the first time in most of our lives, it's a huge psychological change. And it's just trying to convince ourselves that, you know, it's for the greater good. So lots of people are making those sort of plans whereby they kind of understand why these sacrifices need to be made, but it doesn't necessarily mean it makes them any happier.
Okay. Would you have a message this Hari Raya?
Jangan balik kampung.
Jangan balik kampung. George, your message.
I think Raya, obviously, is time for reflection. And one of the reflections I think I really need to do is that I think our planet Earth was ill and then just needed this time to recover. So we should love our Earth a lot more. And then this hopefully will never happen again.
Thank you both very much for joining me today. That was Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, and Dr. Helmi Hajimaidin, consultant respiratory physician, in our Doctor in the House series. Selamat Hari Raya to all of you. Catching up during the CMCO on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.